The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
It's lovely to be sitting here tonight. I was actually here last Saturday for our monthly Zazenkai, which is an all-day sit. And I was noticing how the quality of sitting in the Zendo in the evening is very different from the quality of sitting in the Zendo during the day. During the day, there's just much more activity going on outside. Even tonight, of course, there are sirens and that strange sound from a few minutes ago that sounded like a garbage truck rumbling down the street. But on Saturday, it just seemed like there was constant construction noise throughout the entire day, and you could almost feel the energy of Manhattan rising up to the 11th floor. And of course, on a Saturday, if you go outside at lunch, the streets are filled with people, shopping, socializing, arguing, whatever it is that people were doing. And in the evening, it's a little bit quieter. So I like this, the kind of energy of the evening. Perhaps your body holds some tension from the day or from anticipating the commute home this evening. One way or the other, the day is winding down, and it's time to gather our energy and to prepare to rest for the new day tomorrow. So as I was thinking about what to talk about this evening, I struggled with the question, what can I teach? What does Zen teach? What does Zen teach? Now, of course, there are 2,500 years of teaching and interpretation of teachings and so on that we can draw from. So this should be an easy question to answer. Zen teaches no separation, that I am not separate from everything that makes up and has ever made up my life. It teaches no self, that I am an aggregate of causes and conditions that have resulted in the unfolding that is present right here and now. It teaches non-attachment, which is that clinging to something, whether it's a possession, a habit, a job, an idea, a dogma, can cause us tremendous suffering, since the world is constantly changing and impermanent. It teaches generosity and compassion. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them all. But these are all just words. What does Zen practice really teach? And the question, actually, as I was asking it of myself this week, brought me back to Joshu's Mu. If you do koan study, Joshu's Mu is one of the first koans you'll be given by your teacher. And if you have done koan study, you will probably realize that Joshu's Mu is a 10,000 foot high wall that you need to pass over before you can go any further. Now, it's actually a very simple koan. A monk once asked Master Joshu, has a dog Buddha nature or not? And Joshu said, Mu. That's it. That's all you get to work with. Has a dog the Buddha nature or not? Joshu said, Mu. And if you study this koan in the Mumonkan, which is a book of koan collections, the commentary says, in studying Zen, one must pass the barriers set up by the ancient masters. For the attainment of incomparable Satori, one has to cast away his discriminating mind. Those who have not passed the barrier and have not cast away the discriminating mind are all phantoms haunting trees and plants. Well, sometimes I too am a phantom haunting trees and plants, but that's what Master Mumon says. So, cast away the discriminating mind. Interesting words. Now, of course, the literal meaning of this koan is that a monk asks if a dog has Buddha nature. And Buddha nature is, one interpretation is we're talking about our awakened nature, our capacity to wake up. But in the Mahayana tradition, there's actually an even more expansive notion of Buddha nature, which is expressed when we chant during service. Buddha nature pervades everywhere, revealing right here and now. So the literal answer to this question is, if Buddha nature pervades everywhere, pervades everything, the literal answer to this question is, of course, a dog has Buddha nature, right? But Joshu answers mu, which means literally no. Or he answers mu busho, which means no Buddha nature. So is he literally saying no? No, a dog does not have Buddha nature. Now it is said that at another time, a monk asked Joshu the same question, and he answered ooh, or yes. So if in fact, when Joshu is asked this question one time, he says mu, and another time when he's asked this question, he says ooh, we can safely say that Joshu is probably not literally saying no. There's something else going on here. And what I think is going on here, and of course we don't know the circumstances of this in which this story took place. We're only given this little bit to work with. But part of what I think is going on here, maybe all of what is going on here, is that Joshu, in this moment, is expressing his Buddha nature. And that is why when you are working on the Mu Koan, you must become Mu. And if you read all of the commentary, and believe me, when I was working on Mu, I read every piece of commentary I could lay my little hands on. It says you cannot pass this koan without becoming Mu. Master Mumon struggled for 6 years to pass Mu. And one day, upon hearing the sound of the drum, da-dum, he realized mu. What did he realize? I don't recall, actually, at this point, how long my struggle with mu took. I know that I have a tendency to think too much, to intellectualize during koan study. It's much easier for me to explain than to present a koan, probably as I'm doing right now. So often when I'm working with a koan, I will understand it first intellectually, but it takes me a lot longer to understand it experientially. So I'm pretty sure that I worked on mu for a very long time, because mu cannot be understood intellectually. And I distinctly remember actually working on mu during a winter session at Wisdom House. The days are very short at that time of year. It was cold outside. And I was working with Mu all the time. When I was sitting, when I was brushing my teeth, when I was going to the bathroom, when I was falling asleep, when I was waking up. What is Mu? What is Mu? Now, I had a lucky break of sorts because of a book that I found on the shelves at Wisdom House. Now, I know you're not supposed to be reading during retreats. Okay, I broke the rules. The book was called The Cloud of Unknowing, and it's actually an anonymous work of Christian mysticism, which was written in the second half of the 14th century. And the underlying message of this book, or this work, which I actually got from Wikipedia. I don't have the book, but in order to research this talk, I went to my trusted Wikipedia source of all information that I need to know about quickly. And it said, the message of this work is that the way to know God is to abandon consideration of God's particular activities and attributes and be courageous enough to surrender one's mind and ego to the realm of unknowing, at which point one may begin to glimpse the nature of God. Doggone it, doesn't that sound like koan study? Just allowing that koan to drip, drip, drip into your subconscious and see what happens. The book counsels a young student to seek God not through knowledge and intellect, but through intense contemplation, motivated by love and stripped of all thought. Drop body and mind. And the experience of a cloud of unknowing is introduced in chapter 3. When you first begin this work, you find only darkness, and as it were a cloud of unknowing. Reconcile yourself to wait in the darkness as long as is necessary, but still go on longing after him who you love. For if you are to feel him, or see him in the life, it must always be in this cloud, in this darkness. That's the only place you can see God. And it's brought about by putting aside all thoughts and desires under a cloud of unknowing, dropping body and mind. So I'm going to buy this book and read it again, but it was just somehow from a different lineage, from a tradition that speaks of God instead of Buddha nature, it helped me understand what it is to work on Mu, what it is to just not know the answer, not even know how to get to the answer. Actually, chapters 39 and 40, according to Wikipedia, recommend the focus on a single word as the means to invoke the fullness of God. How about Mu for a word? It's just, you know, it's just astonishing, even just now, going back and reminding myself of that experience. Of working on that koan at that time in that dark winter night of darkness, of unknowing, and just being Mu, just becoming Mu. When we intend to pray for goodness, let all our thought and desire be contained in one small word, God. Nothing else and no other words are needed, for God is the epitome of all goodness. immerse yourself in the spiritual reality it speaks of, yet without precise ideas of God's works, whether great or small, spiritual or material. Do not consider any particular virtue which God may teach you through grace, whether it is humility, charity, patience, abstinence, hope, faith, moderation, chastity, or evangelical poverty. For to a contemplative they are in some sense all the same. Let this little word represent to you God in all his fullness and nothing less than the fullness of God. And so I urge you, after experience rather than knowledge. And it goes on. So my experience of Mu was one of intense meditative absorption, deep samadhi. Just this moment is Mu. Samu is Mu. Eating is Mu. This feeling of intense self-doubt is Mu. This feeling of pain is Mu. This tiredness, Mu. This excitement, Mu. And then at one point, everything dropped away. The self disappeared. I had a flash of realization. I didn't figure it out. I can't explain it even now. But I realized something. I think usually we live in a state of separation, a state where I am here and you are there, a condition of things to do, goals, problems, things to look forward to. And this state is based on a misunderstanding that the self has its own existence. And that's why a central part of this practice, what Zen has to teach us, is that we come back to samadhi. We come back to this realization of no separation, of turning off the discriminating mind. We return to it again and again. We can return to it again and again. It's the clear ground of practice, this one-pointedness, this in-the-momentness, thusness. A monk asked Yun Men, "What is every atom samadhi?" Yun Men said, "Rice in the bowl, water in the bucket." In the Flower Ornament Sutra, it says, we enter samadhi on one atom, and we return from samadhi on every atom. We get up from zazen connected to our lives, connected to ourselves. And of course, the moment of realizing Mu, the moment of insight, is not the end of the path. It's just the beginning, in a way. As it says in The Identity of the Relative and the Absolute, to be attached to things is illusion. To encounter the Absolute is not yet enlightenment. It also says, ordinary life fits the Absolute as a box and its lid. The Absolute works together with the relative like two arrows meeting in midair. So this Mu experience for me is a touchstone. Returning to samadhi, returning to Mu, returning to not knowing. For me, it can be profoundly helpful when I'm struggling with something in my personal life to realize that I don't know. I just don't know the answer. I don't know, actually, what this life is about. I can't. We can't. As long as we're alive in a physical body, we will have problems. We will have separation. We also have samadhi. We have Mu. Oneness of mind, right here in the plum blossoms.